everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of Radio Radar. How's everyone doing?
Good. You sound so...
No, I'm talking to the audience.
Oh.
Wait, this is like the...
I want to go. I'm ready.
This is like the Dora the Explorer, like giving them time to answer the question.
They're not going to answer you.
All right,
that's all I really wanted to say.
I'm Hollander Cooper, here with...
Tom Agrino.
Sophomore Jinx, Henry Gilbert.
And
Lorenzo Valoria.
How you doing, Lorenzo?
I'm great.
It is his first time on the show.
It is.
Yeah, first podcast with Games Radar. Pretty sweet. Pretty sweet.
Well, congratulations.
Really? Did we not invite you to anything?
No, I don't get invited to things.
I'm sorry.
Before we jump into the festivities, we want to remind everyone that later this week, so Friday the 24th, we're doing a 24-hour marathon for Child's Play.
Right.
So you're going to be able to watch us play video games with us, donate money, and get us to do dumb things. The dumb thing tiers are still sort of in the works. But
if you have a good idea for a dumb thing that you want to see us do, feel free to notify us in some way.
Because right now it's just people getting slapped in the face with foam hands,
right.
Us playing embarrassing games, and us playing other embarrassing games.
Yeah,
yeah, sure. We'll do really dumb things for children. Think of the children. Think of the children, people.
And also the dumb things that you want to see us do.
That too.
Some of the games that we'll be playing, Sleeping Dogs, Bastion, Spec Ops, we have a question mark, so maybe not.
Well, we'll probably, and a lot of other games, any game you can think of pretty much that people still play multiplayer.
Yeah.
We may not be playing that on the live stream.
Correct.
But someone in the other room will be playing it with you.
TF2, Gears 3, Uncharted 3, and we'll have a Minecraft server going. And apparently, I think we may have a Mass Effect 3.
Oh, we're going to have Mass Effect 3.
Oh,
games
we are going to have.
We were talking about it earlier. Like, that's like half of the suggestions are people like, play Mass Effect 3. And it's like, man, a year ago, no one would have expected people to still be playing Mass Effect 3's multiplayer.
The multiplayer is great. It's
so
awesome.
Good.
Like it at all. Is
really?
That just me?
Yeah, it is.
I played the Vanguard in the actual game.
The Jedi.
And so... I just feel so limited because there's like a little bit of a lag. It doesn't have that instant response.
If you're playing the Vanguard, you just have to play with a shotgun and
just
use like your run real quick.
It's
super good though.
I don't like the freemium BS about it with the buy a pack of cards.
You get that stuff for free though as you play. Every like two matches you unlock one.
You can spend money though. I've known people who've spent like at least $20.
But it's only co-op, so they'll never actually hurt you. They'll only help your team. But later we'll get into a freemium system that I disagree with, personally.
What?
It's a little tease. We also have a fun interview with some of the team from Darksiders.
Yes, I forget their names.
Well, you
mentioned
them.
Hayden and Ben.
I think it was Baden and Hen, actually.
Oh, damn it.
So we're gonna get into that. And we have some giveaways at the end of the show, so be sure to stick around. But
To the end.
Yeah, don't skip to the end. Wait until the end. So first up is the top 7 for the week, which is the top 7 80s cartoons that would make totally righteous video games. Now, we're not going to spoil any of them right away. We're going to start playing the theme songs first, starting with number 7. Oh, yeah.
They say it immediately, the first word of the song. It's
Jim!
Jim will do anything.
Truly, truly, truly outrageous.
I wish I knew a girl like Jim.
So, yes, number 1 is Gem. So we want there to be a Gem video game. And
do we have any rationale for this?
Yes.
Where did this feature
The rationale is based solely on the fact that Gem is truly, truly
outrageous.
Outrageous.
Yeah.
Classic 80s show. The most – it's like – you watch the intro, and it's just like neon colors and big hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's truly timeless.
Truly timeless.
Even work in the...
Well, what we were thinking is probably doing a game kind of like Rhythm Thief.
Uh-huh.
Or so you're kind of going around, and you're like, you're doing some like whatever you do in Rhythm Thieves, which I'm guessing is essentially talking to people with giant facial hair, like in Professor Layton.
You steal art also.
So, okay, maybe you don't steal art. But you go around, and you click on the touch screen, but then you go to a gig... And that's where it just becomes a rhythm game. So like a bunch of rhythm games sewn together with a beautiful narrative about probably not doing drugs.
And
if it's the 80s and it was not doing drugs and telling your parents if anyone like tries to like rolls up in a van and tries to offer you candy.
While also still being truly outrageous.
Truly, truly outrageous.
Could you play that song just a little bit more? Who are her rivals? They have a lyric in there.
Do they?
We are the something.
Isn't it the Misfits or something?
Is it the? I didn't want to say the Misfits.
It is the Misfits.
I was sure I was getting it confused with the actual band, the Misfits. We are the Misfits. Our songs are better.
I didn't take you for a huge gem.
Well, the thing was, it was on the USA cartoon. It was on the USA Cartoon Express every afternoon, and so it was probably in between boy cartoons, and I'm just too lazy to change.
Oh, I see. It was between the boy cartoons.
That claim, if I'm not being too bold, is truly. Truly outrageous. By the way, my knowledge of Jem is that phrase and that theme song. Yeah.
Well, I do know she transforms when she wears her earrings from a mild-mannered girl into glam singer Jem. It's all in the opening of the show. That's all.
This is the first time I've ever heard of this cartoon.
Jem, don't worry about it.
That's truly outrageous.
The next one you will know.
The next one, we're going to roll right into number six.
I feel like you're too young for this list, Lorenzo.
No, not that young.
What's that?
Why are they going to say
it's
it already?
It's Inspector Gadget. Okay.
Let's skip ahead. And it goes, it's all of a sudden, it's...
There we go. Mm-hmm. Oh,
number six is Inspector Gadget. Mm-hmm. Which there was actually a little debate about how this game would work because the writer, Lucas... opted to go with, I'm trying to remember, I think it was sort of an open worldy kind of game or like some kind, or maybe it was like a, whatever it was, it missed the point that I personally believed, which is he can't be the hero.
No,
he
should be Penny and Brain.
He's a bumbling idiot who messes everything up while like a 7-year-old and her dog fix everything.
So he should be the villain.
Not even that, but it's like, it almost needs to be like a move game where you're like moving stuff. So that he doesn't, like, stumble downstairs and die in front of you, scarring you for life and ruining everything for everyone.
Because Inspector Gadget can't do anything, right?
No, he really can't.
Well, meanwhile, Penny's computer book could be filled with a million things. What if they could do anything?
What if they made it on either the Wii U using that computer
book? I know,
book,
that's what I was just thinking.
Wonder Book.
Maybe not the one. But definitely, like, that Mario title that where you have control of the Wii U and you're... building the course or making it easier.
Oh, yeah, you tap on platforms to appear.
That would be an interesting game. And then, but at the same time, it's like if Inspector Gadget wasn't a bumbling idiot, he would be fun to play as because it would be like walk up to enemy, context-sensitive button. He pulls out, like, his pinky falls off and, like, tear gas sprays out.
Right.
And he maces.
And then
like,
you just tear gas somebody.
Yeah. Or someone
like,
or someone would be...
I tear gassed people!
That's what he sounds like, by the way.
Someone would be trying to kill him and then he'd like accidentally tie a shoe and then the person trying to kill him would like fall over or something.
And then Brain would go over and rip his throat out.
Right. I
essentially want this game to be like Dead to Rights. Except everywhere you go, you're just playing as a dog ripping people's throats out.
Yeah.
It could work with voice commands of just saying, go, gadget, blah, blah, blah.
See, now I'm imagining turn into that it should be game. Like Scribblenauts. Where you're playing as Inspector Gadget and it just says like go gadget and you write like Cthulhu and then like he takes his hat off and Cthulhu just comes up and everyone goes crazy and scatters away.
But then that wouldn't fit with Inspector Gadget's bumbling nature.
Would not be canon.
Alright, so here's what happens. Canon. Beginning of the game, it's just like, Penny, what are you doing? He's just like, I'm installing a microchip so you don't hurt yourself, idiot. And then she installs a microchip and it just is the picture of the Wii U. Because that's how video games work. It's like in Luigi's Mansion where he just literally uses a Game Boy Advance.
A Game Boy Horror, it's called.
But it's not. It's Game Boy Advance.
Next!
This one has a special place in my heart.
Oh,
I'm liking it.
One, two, three, four. You gotta skip ahead to the best part.
No idea what this is.
Oh, God. Fun fact, when I was like 5, I made a green tail out of like, I guess it was probably like cardboard, and I fixed it to my butt and walked around my townhouse pretending to be Denver the Last Dinosaur because I didn't want to be friends with Denver or a whole lot
more.
I wanted to be the Last Dinosaur. By the way, I recently went back and watched the beginning of that show. There's no like... good misunderstood character. They're all just kind of punks. They're all kind of scumbags, and then they find a dinosaur while they're like skateboarding somewhere they're not allowed to be.
Yeah,
it's like in a construction zone or something.
I forget.
Does he like change their lives?
In a band with him, right? Doesn't he? He plays guitar in the opening.
He
wears pink shades.
Yes, rocking pink shades.
Yeah.
And the suggestion we have is making this game kind of like a boy in his blob. Where you kind of play as a boy, and instead of a blob, you have a dinosaur. Which, I mean, that kind of formula really works for anything that involves a dinosaur.
Probably.
Or I think it should play like what I imagine The Last Guardian would play like, which is
just him doing things for you.
Him doing things
a little
for
too highbrow for Denver The Last Guardian.
See, that's the thing. Like, seriously, close your eyes. Everyone close your eyes and seriously imagine what we've seen of that game, except instead of a giant, beautiful griffin, it's a goofy-looking green dinosaur.
In high tops.
I just imagine him helping us rock out.
And yeah, he just whips out his guitar and just goes to town.
What did Denver do? He just rocked out, right?
He was a dinosaur, so he also kind of was like goofy and tried to dress up like a kid.
Mm-hmm. He was a celebrity too, I feel like, wasn't he?
But nobody knew he was a dinosaur because he dressed up as a human.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I think would probably be an interesting thing about the game.
He's not a man, he's a chicken boo.
Okay.
So that's Animaniacs. That's a 90s.
That's 90s.
That's true.
The next one I'm pretty sure everyone would agree with.
We'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe.
See, they did have a recent G.I. Joe game.
G.I. Joe
but they,
was
these
there.
Deserve totally righteous games. And this that game was far from righteous.
That was actually...
It was gnarly and not in the cool surfer sense.
And it was based on the film, based on the 80s cartoon, not directly based on the 80s cartoon. So
another
I think we have
fact,
some leeway there.
This one is not about me dressing up as a dinosaur, though. Mm-hmm. They recorded every character in that game yelling pork chop sandwiches, and in the end, they were not allowed to use it.
Really?
What?
They wanted to make it so just like... Sometimes when there's an explosion, the character just goes pork chop sandwiches, and then like
those PAs, remade PAs.
They weren't allowed.
My favorite was body massage. That one with the guy just saying body massage.
Who wants a body massage?
So yeah, G.I. Joe. It would be so easy to make. I mean, you could go Contra with it. You could go. I mean, if you look at the best 3DS launch titles, which was the Ghost Recon tactical game. Mm-hmm. It was essentially a pretend G.I. Joe game because all of the characters were just G.I. Joe characters, except like instead of being like a guy with a chain gun that was from G.I. Joe, it was like, oh, you're Ghost Chain.
Yeah, they
basically
had...
anywhere that they could have gone with this that would have been better than where they actually went with it.
Yeah.
That Ghost Recon 3DS game had none of the depth of most Tom Clancy games, right?
No, it was literally it was like half Advanced Wars and half what you would expect from a movie tie-in G.I. Joe game. Mm-hmm. And somehow that was still really good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And I feel like there are so many ways you could take a G.I. Joe. I mean, the most robust thing would do like a full-on like third-person shooter
right. Or
something, which is kind of what they tried to do.
Yeah.
But I'd want them to shoot lasers, not guns.
Yeah,
seriously. I want it to be like the 80s show.
They have a free out to make it like a teen or E10 or whatever rated game by just having you shoot blue lasers at robots. There doesn't have to be a single human in the game. Or
I like the idea of turning it into like a Smash TV clone where they're just like running around the battlefield.
That would have been awesome. And they could still do that if you're listening.
Smash
Mr. Hasbro. Roger Hasbro, I'm guessing his name is.
Roger.
Clint?
Dave?
Steve?
Well, who
I
knows?
Don't know.
What Terry
Hasbro.
Terry
yes.
Hasbro.
Who knows what they'll do for when the second G.I. Joe movie comes out, whenever that happens.
Probably exactly what they did for the first one.
Who was the last – was it Ubisoft, the publisher?
That was
the last
EA.
EA? Mm-hmm.
It was EA. They own the rights to that for some reason through some – oh, because they have a Hasbro deal.
They own
Hasbro Family Game.
Oh, that's right.
And what have you.
But Activision has Transformers.
Just give it to High Moon. They'll take care of it.
Number three.
There we go.
Actually, let this one go for a little bit. Just listen to how the theme song works.
Prince of Eternia and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer.
He's just explaining the entire series. Also, go back and watch it. He has the best pink shirt ever. Pink vest. It's essentially
and the best.
It's sort of a blouse
and the best haircut too. And this haircut doesn't change. It's so awesome.
In which blouses were cool for dudes to wear.
Was that time in
1980? Yes, it was. Actually, yes,
pants.
It was
with fur pants and
it was like fur briefs,
cut-off jeans, it's like, and blouses was kind of the thing to wear.
Fur briefs around his tight pants.
Right.
I remember they all had the same legs. They all wore fur briefs. Every toy of the He-Man line.
They sure did.
Yeah, Skeletor had fur briefs.
Yeah.
Man, it was great.
If they made a game out of it, I think the obvious, and we read on the article, the obvious, of course, would be like a God of War style game where you're essentially just He-Man tearing things, just ripping the heads off of skeletons and stuff.
And punching walls. He punches a lot of walls
they
in
could
that
also,
series.
They could also do it sort of like Castle Crashers, where you get to play as He-Man or She-Ra or that floating, creepy-looking purple thing.
Or
that female.
No. You wouldn't want to play as Orko. You'd want to play as Man-at-Arms or the Battering Ram guy. What was that guy's name?
I'm going to go with Bataram.
I think it was Bataram.
I don't think it was, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
Yeah, Bataram. That's.
I want to say Ramrod, but that doesn't sound right.
That's Super Troopers.
No,
okay. Team Ramrod. Team Ramrod.
Say it.
But, I mean, it's another one that it's like, of all of the things they're picking and choosing, that one would be a really easy one. Yeah, and it's also sort of ripe for a reboot, like a Cartoon Network sort of gritty reboot.
They had one in like 2003 that wasn't or early 2000s that wasn't a bad reboot. It, you know, it only lasted like 26 episodes, but
I like how 26 episodes is like nothing for a cartoon.
A mere 26 episodes. Mm-hmm.
Well, most of them go to like what SpongeBob's up to like 200 or something.
It's probably more than that by now. Adventure Time's up to like 100. It's only like 4 seasons in. It's been out for like a year.
Wow.
It seems like it would be difficult to make a cartoon. Like, very time-intensive.
Now they just...
I thought they took, like, 9 months an episode.
They used to, but now it's all now it's all computers.
Oh,
not if you recycle all the animations like they used to.
Well, yeah, He-Man is one of the most, like, terribly animated things ever made.
He-Man
like,
and the old Scooby-Doo, you'll notice that no two things are moving on screen at once. It's like one character starts blocking, and another swings his weapon, and then he hits him. And then that character stops blocking and does something while the other one stays in place. Or, like, everyone will be completely still and one mouth will move.
Well,
that's what I want from the game, actually.
Yeah, that was something that annoyed me in all cartoons back then was, like, you'd have cool characters with swords like He-Man or Leonardo, and they would always use the swords in some secondary way other than cutting someone. They would, like, use swords to cut a bunch of logs off of a back of a truck
like
and then run over people. Yeah.
I like the idea of them just, like, murdering someone and then everybody standing around like...
And he's like, do you think I carry this sword around for
decoration? Right.
Idiot.
What, you think I just chop wood with this thing? It's a murder device.
I will knife you. And then everyone runs away.
Right.
Number two... is loading.
Oh.
Welcome to Video Land.
Oof, boy. Ouch.
What?
Just the...
Wow.
That was Palutena.
Okay.
It's Poggleware.
So, yes.
It's Poggleland.
Captain N, the Game Master. I mean, we kind of saw what this would be like in the Subspace Emissary in Smash Brothers.
You kinda did.
But it does feel like Nintendo is willing to nod to its past enough to make something like this work.
I would say Nintendo is willing to nod to its Japanese past, but the American stuff they kind of pretend never happened.
Disavowed.
But in terms of just like, I mean, they can take that character and then just have him run. It's an excuse to kind of recycle old Mario levels.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think it would work if they did it like a 2D game or even, I mean, it would essentially be Nintendo Kingdom Hearts or Mushroom Kingdom Hearts, if you will.
I will. I thought Captain N, like now he looks so lame, like with his NES controller belt and bright red jacket.
His zapper.
That also, there was one episode that really bugged me as a kid. Like, he could press pause on his belt and stop time. And then, like, that saved the day at one point. I was like, why doesn't he do that every time they're in trouble?
Space-time continuum would be shattered if Captain N used all of his powers.
He would be ripping a hole in it too often. Ugh. Too often!
He'd be ripping it a new one.
Too often!
And also, Mega Man was green. Like, Mega Man was green.
He had that raspy voice.
That's canon. That's why Capcom isn't making new Mega Man games. It's because they realize that they've been messing them up by not making him a raspy-voiced green bomber.
Also, as I learned from researching the history of Donkey Kong, in that show they made Donkey Kong the size of King Kong, like, for some reason, even though that's
He's never
the case. That was never the case.
Well, Cranky Kong could have shrunk.
Yeah. I don't like... I
don't respect the choices by the creative director of Captain N, the Game Master.
No, I was going to say I don't respect that Rare says that Cranky Kong is the original Donkey Kong.
Oh, controversy.
I don't like that. I mean, Nintendo has basically accepted it as true, but I don't like that. I don't want Donkey Kong to be old. I want this same Donkey Kong we saw in the arcade game to be the Donkey Kong with the tie.
Well, you can believe that because it's a video game. And no one is going to stop you except Tom, who may dictate that you have to believe the Rare continuity.
No, it's okay. He can do it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to number one.
Dancers, Thundercats.
Thundercats.
So I have never seen an episode of Thundercats. Not a single episode of Thundercats.
So you don't know the enjoyment of being a child confused by your sexuality and getting mildly attractive to a cat.
Exactly.
You
I did not have to go through that psychological.
Are you
have
talking
to
cat people?
Are you talking about Lionel or Chitara when you're talking about who you're
which one were you into? Because I was totally Chitara.
It's actually Snarf.
Snarf.
So yes, Thundercats, which actually has come back in full form on Cartoon Network with a fairly cool TV show.
Not bad.
Is Snarf still snarfing it up?
Snarf is essentially a kitty now, like a real cat.
Aww. Does he at least say snarf?
He kind of mumbles it. Okay. He's sort of like if you like trained a cat for its entire life, like if its sole purpose was to learn to say snarf. That's sort of what it sounds like. I think I stopped watching about halfway through because I got bored.
But does the sword still grow? Because I thought that was the coolest part.
Well, one of our snarfs. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Snarfs.
It's
I can actually add zero things to this conversation. I am not. I should have done my homework.
Show.
Yeah.
There was a weird. It was always weird to me, and the more I thought about it, that in the first episode, Lion-O, like. They basically established that Lion-O is a 10-year-old boy with the body of a man. And so, like, thanks to the wreck in the time-space continuum where they teleported. Just very weird.
See, they don't do that in the new one, I don't think. In the new one, it's like Lion-O is actually his father, who is sort of – it's essentially like, oh, he was the original Lion-O kind of. And then his son – it's still – it's weird. It's one of those things where it's like everyone's still kind of the same except there's also like – oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. Lion-O's dad in the show is voiced by the original
voice
of Lion-O.
I like that.
So it works. It's an interesting show, but it is a game that, like, they could definitely do it as a Castlevania kind of game, like a Metroidvania-styled thing, and it would probably work pretty well.
Yeah. You could fight Mumra and all his dumb animal friends, people.
If I had to pick exactly how I want it to happen, I'd probably go with Way Forward. Making it into just a 2D Metroidvania-style game. But then again, they've kind of – they're like 50-50 right now.
Nah, I'd put them more at 70-30.
Did you play the Blood Rain game?
No.
Okay. Well. Then that immediately docks them 70%.
Well, but then they also I can name three right now they did recently. Thor, Boyness Blob, and Mighty Switch Force. Those were good.
Yeah, but then they also did Aliens game for the
– I heard that wasn't that bad.
It was okay.
All right. Speaking of Way Forward.
Should we move Way Forward?
I think we can move way forward.
All right, so that's the top seven. You can check it out every Monday. GamesRadar.com. And next week is also going to be us discussing stupid stuff from the 80s and 70s.
Can we?
Teaser. No, we're not going to.
We can't tell the title.
Oh, no.
Really?
No.
Not even like a little incentive for our wonderful GR Radio Radar
fans? It's another one that's related to other entertainment.
Okay.
If that's – so it's related to like movies, TV shows.
So in other words, I'm going to have to do hella research to be relevant in the next week's conversation.
You should be good.
I should be good?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about dumb stuff. You'll like it.
Okay. I like dumb stuff.
So moving on.
I'm actually going to go ahead and look at the editorial calendar.
Oh, so don't spoil it for people. But so we're going to move on to news. Probably the biggest announcement or sort of series of confusing announcements – was everything that happened with OnLive.
Yeah.
So it started off with OnLive. Everyone was like, all right, so OnLive's shutting down today, was the rumor.
Right. Mm-hmm. OnLive being the on-demand streaming, game streaming service that you could basically
use any PC for.
Yeah, use any PC, your phone. They had a little set-top box that you could work as a game console. And you could basically play not any game.
PC games.
No. They were console games too, I thought.
No. They had to be on – it wasn't PC exclusives, but like any of the games. They were all running – so essentially they were all running on super powerful PCs back in some – warehouse.
Pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
Like, I like that idea. I feel like that idea is the future.
It is. It's the Sega channel of the future.
I remember when it was announced, like, in 2006 or something, the first time everybody was like, this is the future. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It was later than that.
But apparently, things weren't going well for them.
Well, I mean, from the very get-go, things haven't gotten well. I mean, that's the kind of idea, it seems like, where it's either going to take off immediately and people are going to be like, yeah, we're going to support this. We're going to make this happen because we can all believe in it. Or everyone will be like, eh.
And it came out that they've been throwing around numbers like 4 million. And apparently that was like people who have ever signed up for OnLive.
Right.
Yeah, which is actually super low.
I think people just took it, and then they tried to like get onto it to use the free game trial system that they had.
Yeah, they had figuring out how to monetize it.
Yeah, and then after it has come out recently that like the rumor is the peak concurrent users was like under 2,000 people at a time.
Really?
And the reason that they ran out of money was because they had servers ready for like a few million people.
Yeah.
And they were just waiting. Waiting for that day where it would take off.
One killer app.
But it did turn out that it was not technically shutting down.
Right.
And the CEO kind of had a meeting with everyone where he said that like they were just laying off half of them. Half of them were being brought into a new company that was as of yet unnamed and funded by a mysterious backer.
Probably just being some venture capitalist who was trying to salvage.
Yeah, it's some like Silicon Valley company it's a guy that just invests in lots of companies.
He has millions of dollars sitting around. Yes. Like,
so and apparently they are.
He's probably like a leverage buyout kind of guy.
Yeah. And it turns out he is buying them, sort of. On live service is continuing. They laid off half of the people.
Such that it is.
Yeah, they laid off half of the people. Yep. The other half are rehired, and they're still calling the new company on live. And some things there's like a bunch of confusing, like why would they shut down? What I read is the way they did the shutdown is they don't have to – they gave some of their employees stock, and now they don't have to technically give them stock because or they don't have to pay that out because it's a new company. Like they declared bankruptcy on the old company.
I'm sure there's just some shady stuff that's going on.
And
to,
the CEO, and there's a bunch of stories involving the CEO saying he's like in a few months we're going to start suing the crap out of Gaikai for stealing our ideas.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been confirmed. It's all like leaks from people who were at that big final meeting.
Yeah.
Where like he's like we're going to sue the crap out of Sony and Gaikai. Like,
fuck Gaikai.
It's almost like
they beat us fair and square. They're taking those guys down.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like they're just kind of playing like the people like copyright lawsuit.
Right.
Like they're just going to try to patent lawsuit.
I'm sure there's some technology in there that they felt was proprietary or they patented. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing with OnLive is like I've used it. I made the mistake of using it. Well, maybe not the mistake on like a T1 connection. So I never had any of the problems with lag, but I hear a lot of people say that it was laggy.
I have a friend who he used to be a PC gamer, but was never able to keep up with PC gaming more recently. And the day of the shutdown, rumored shutdown, he sent me a text saying like, this sucks. I've been using it for like a year and a half and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So he has a mediocre laptop. And he was able to run it perfectly. He said with very little lag. The only lag he got was like when he was playing like big racing games or whatever. But he said like it worked. I mean, maybe it worked because they had like 30 servers for every person playing.
Right.
You know, I half expected when Sony announced the Gaikai thing that like Microsoft would
pick up.
They pick up on live just to like match Sony, you know, to keep up with it. But
or the thing I've been asking for mentioning for like a year and a half is like, okay, rumors are Steam is trying to do something. Hey, Valve, you have billions of dollars. Throw some money at OnLive, and all of a sudden, that OnLive box now sells Steam games.
Right.
Why would they not do that? I mean, I'm sure there's a reason, and people are, like, yelling at their music players, and I just don't know it.
I mean, the whole service, too, just is very problematic from, like, industry retail relations, because if OnLive would have taken off, then there goes GameStop's entire used game business, like... If OnLive would have streamed like the entire back catalog of a bunch of like year-old games and back, then there would be no reason to ever buy a used game again. Essentially,
if only. My only concern with OnLive is that it never got like I wanted to spend $20 a month and play whatever I wanted.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, they started off with that subscription plan, but then they came out and said, "Oh, and you also have to buy the game."
Yeah, that was the
thing. Which is ridiculous.
It's like if I could like almost Netflix instant video games, even if there were some limitations, like you can only play like 10 games a month, it would totally be worth it. But they never came out with that like much needed plan.
Yeah.
So we're still waiting for more updates on it. I'm sure this isn't the end of it. There's like more news every day.
And I still feel like game streaming is what is going to be the defining characteristic of the next generation of consoles. Like that Gaikai purchase is basically, I feel like, the crux of the PS4. And I'm just shocked that, you know, this has gone under, and nobody actually got any enthusiasm behind it.
And don't be surprised when that feature is used exclusively for game demos and PS1 games, because that's probably
Hey, that's still not bad.
I think game demos would be the biggest coup, because it's like if every game has a game demo and you just hit a button and start playing it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, especially considering how long it takes to download stuff on the PS3.
I know, right? And you're getting rid of the whole storage issue.
Now I'm actually kind of worried about with how long it takes to install, how well that streaming's going to work on Sony's infrastructure.
I've never noticed Sony's infrastructure to be particularly good. That's just my experience. I have a decent internet connection at home, but certainly not.
Most would agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm still downloading Journey. Started downloading it the day it came out.
Journey's a good game.
Yeah, I love the I like the PS Plus deal of getting all those retail games, but it was the first time I downloaded a retail size game.
It takes onto my eternity. PS,
an eternity, and then I feel like almost twice as long to install too. I took all day.
I never had that issue. I've downloaded like I don't know, a couple of those. Yeah, Infamous 2, and it was fine. It took like I don't know, average PC download for me is like 2 or 3 hours. It took about that long.
I feel like it took me like at least 2 days.
Oh wow!
So maybe it was just.
I've also had like
I have an old PS3 too. I don't know. Do you have a new one or?
Yeah, I have a Slim.
Okay, I have the original Fat.
No, I have a Slim and cable internet, like with the fastest speed you can pay for. Like it is
weird because I've had people say like people that live near me be like, oh no, it works fine for me. It's like, how is it? Like, I'm still downloading the thing that we were downloading at the same time with like, and it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, there was one time where I was reviewing a downloadable game, and I got the code, and I'm like, oh, I'll play it tonight because I have to just do a small write-up tomorrow morning. And at like 8 o'clock, I realized it was a PSN code instead of Xbox. And I'm like, oh, God.
Mother of God.
And then, like, I started downloading it at like 8 at night and, like, walked away. And at midnight, I'm like, are you kidding me? Come on.
27%.
Yes, why? And then I'm like, finally, it's done downloading. Installing. I whispered
for another hour.
Yeah. It whispers back, too.
Anyway.
Says dirty things. Yeah, so that is...
We loved you while you were here. It sounds like you may be here a little longer, but... Yeah.
On Live is on dead.
I don't know.
Long live On Live.
Right.
Is essentially what we're getting
That's fair.
Next big news story... with a relatively slow week in news after all the big news from last week, is Diablo 3 finally has that end game.
Hey, hooray!
So anyone who played Diablo 3 knew that it was... I mean, I enjoyed Diablo 3, but when you actually get to the quote-unquote end of the game, which is sort of level cap, all there is to do is buy items with real money and try to beat Inferno mode. Inferno mode is super difficult to beat or even progress in without spending a lot of in-game or out-of-game money on auction house stuff.
Or and just playing in a really annoying fashion where if you want to kill anything, you have to like completely swap out all of your equipment so that you have at least a remote chance of getting a decent item.
Yeah, and they're now adding an actual endgame, which is like prestige?
More grinding?
What was it called? Paragon?
Paragon. So what happens is now after you hit level 60, you continue to level... In another sense, where when
it's
you
like what
level.
EverQuest did with alternate advancement points.
Oh yeah, and
for my EverQuest.
So it just upgrades your stats, right?
It upgrades your stats with every level by a little bit, but it is now technically up to level 100, with new stats at every level.
No and additional abilities or.
Well, it's getting you
like that, right?
Increased magic and gold find. I know magic find. I think gold find also.
I think all of your stats, pretty much, which is good because the way it works right now is if you go into Inferno without your all your resistances, at least at like a few hundred, you can't do anything.
The idea is basically when you hit max Paragon, you won't need – it's like your magic find is capped at 300. So you won't be – it won't do you any good to be swapping out equipment. So then you can focus on, you know, actually good equipment instead of having to, like, juggle the whole magic find.
I still feel kind of burnt by this just because I've already spent a few dozen hours at level 60 not gaining alternate levels, jumping through all of these hoops while Blizzard was just like, nah, endgame's cool, guys.
I mean,
it's meant to be literally impossible.
Third week of August, this game came out in May. When did it come out? Was it May?
I think so.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
So how many months is that? I can't do math for shit. What?
Like May?
4 months.
June, 4 months?
July?
3 months.
three months.
3 months of just leaving, like, your people hanging.
Just
like,
hanging
how is anybody
out.
Still
they did,
with
they did
this
minor
game?
Updates, and they kept being like, this should fix it, you guys. And then, like, they announced it and then immediately pushed it out. Because I think they were worried people would just be like, all right, I'm not going to play until you put it out then.
Yeah, no, totally. I wouldn't.
It seems weird to me that Blizzard waits forever to put out Diablo 3. And now this should have been a case of, like, they just should have delayed it three more months. And
yeah, the launch was awful. The launch was horrible. I couldn't even get on the game for, I don't know, how long did that take? Like,
it was a few days.
Three days?
I mean, I am tempted to jump back in. It's just so interesting to see them let it hang for so long.
Yeah, I mean, my whole gripe with that game is I played, 40 hours maybe, and I didn't get a single legendary item. And it was all yellows all the time. And I'm like, dude, come on. You got to at least throw me a little bit of a bone
here. What they did is they changed the way legendary items work, where they have a chance. Like, usually yellow items are better than legendary items, but they didn't explain it properly. Mm-hmm. And legendary items are still, like, why have them if they're not going to be better most of the time?
I know, exactly, right? So and the itemization is just awful.
And when I finally was like, oh, I'm supposed to have my character be barely functional so I can be carrying around, like, a bag full of magic find gear, then I started finding stuff, and it was like, this isn't actually rewarding.
Right, yeah.
Like, the game itself is still fun. It's just not fun in the way it was when I was waking up at, like, 5 in the morning to do Mephisto runs,
right. Mm-hmm. Which was unbelievably gratifying.
It was so good. Every one. Yeah. Nothing but blues, don't matter. Jump back. Yeah. Keep going. Shut up, Mom. I'll get dressed when I want to get dressed and go to school. Sorry. I get flashbacks sometimes. While we're talking about game updates, the other big one that was announced and then immediately came out was the MVM update, which was Man versus Machine, M-A-N-N, to Team Fortress 2, adding a co-op mode.
I haven't tried it. I know. Were you and Lucas playing it this weekend?
Yeah, it's Horde mode.
Yeah.
Sounded like it. They had been, teasing this since forever, right?
They've been, they're teasing it in a Valve way. So, 2 years ago, there were videos that showed robots in them, and people were like, oh, man, it means they're working on a mode with robots. And Valve's like, no, we're not. It's like, well, they were. It just wasn't going to come out for 2 more years.
Right.
So the plot is...
you can lie to us. We don't give...
Yeah, this, for those that are sticklers for plot. So obviously there's the red... It was like Red Man and Blue Man. Those were the two brothers that founded the two different teams.
Right.
They had a long-lost brother named Gray Man who...
I didn't realize there was this much lore.
Is there a story to TF2?
It's a ridiculous story, but now Gray Man is back, and the Reds and Blues have to join together to beat back the robots. And the robots are some of them are just robot versions of the regular classes, but there are other ones. There's the Sentry Buster, which is just a giant spiky ball that runs up to your sentries and blows up. And it is much more than Horde because there's huge upgrades you can get every time you start. And the thing that kind of bugs me that I'm interested to see how it sort of plays out in the long term is when you go to play, there are regular servers that you can just play on whatever, and you don't get any special items, but you can buy a $1 ticket to play on the ranked servers and get items at the end if you do well. I find that kind of ridiculous.
That's them crossing the line?
I think it might be. I mean, I understand that you're getting, for $1, you're getting $10 worth of hats.
Right.
But to me, when I'm playing a game, especially in 2012, and I see ranked and unranked, I don't really consider playing unranked to be – that doesn't count.
So almost. Is the only way to play a ranked match to pay $1?
Yes.
Really?
Wow.
Yes.
I did not realize that.
But it's an otherwise free update, though.
It's a free update. You can play unranked matches, and you'll get the normal items you would get. But when you play, the only way to play on their official servers is to buy a $1 ticket.
It's a dollar per match?
It's a dollar per match, but you don't. The dollar isn't spent until you win and get your reward.
Oh, that's 90s internet style pay for every minute you're on there. That's crazy.
And a lot of people have been arguing with me, but I feel like if Call of Duty did this exactly as is, even came out free to play, because people were like, well, you don't get anything. It's in ranked Call of Duty, you level up and gain perks and new weapons and new armor and new items.
It's like gaming in a cyber cafe where you have to pay by the hour.
It bugs me on a level where this is obviously the first update they've made after free to play that was completely this is because the game is free to play now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, this is showing me a dystopian gaming future
because of free to play games. That could actually add up really fast if I'm understanding you right. Because if you're playing 30 games a night, 10 games a night.
The rounds take longer because
Still, $10 a night?
But you don't have to play ranked is the...
Oh, my God. That would be so expensive.
I mean, granted, yeah. I mean, it's almost like a personal thing where it's like, I don't like playing unranked if ranked is available.
I mean, that's just kind of exploiting what the free-to-play does worst. Like, just creating these weird psychological incentives. Like, yeah, you should probably chip in like a dollar and now another dollar and now $500. Like, I can see people just losing massive amounts of money.
And I feel like they could just do, I've seen a lot of games at least like, oh, you have one free ranked thing a day or
right.
something. But the fact that there's no way to play ranked without spending money yeah. just kind of bugs me.
And the best items are in ranked? Is that what you're saying?
Not the best, just items.
Oh, just
like
items.
You get items at the, if you win, you get, I think, 6 items.
Okay.
Which you will save money technically, because you get 6 random items or 6 specific items, I'm not exactly sure. But you're saving money on hats. Like, it's somebody's like, well, it's like overall you're getting your money's worth because you're getting more than a dollar worth of gear. I'm like, you're getting over like more than a dollar worth of fake hats.
Right.
It's not like you, I mean, technically you can assign worth to it, but it doesn't yeah. really work like
that. I mean,
that.
That's getting into the larger argument of why do people play social games.
Yeah, but if you look at like.
If you like hats, then the hats is what you're going
to. But when you compare it to like what we talked about earlier, the way Mass Effect works, which is like every few matches you can buy essentially a booster pack of random items.
Well, you earn
those. You earn them.
Yeah.
Or you can buy them with actual money. It's like, why can't playing unranked give me points to spend on playing ranked? Like, why are you literally using like a lock and key that I need to spend money on? I already bought, you can't, and people saying like, oh, Team Fortress is free. I bought Team Fortress.
Yeah.
I bought Team Fortress when it wasn't free. Most people probably did that are actually playing Team Fortress now.
Well, at least with that one, Steam should have a way to prove that you did pay for it and then
it
let
does.
The people
it gave you a
who,
hat.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying, then the people who paid for it should get, they shouldn't have to pay that dollar, I think.
But you do.
I know, right?
I understand.
I bought TFT when it came out.
I know. I've been in it that long.
We're whining about a free update that comes with a free mode, but still, it's like, this is just sort of like a, and I hate using slippery slope arguments, but it's like, I don't want to spend a dollar per game.
Although, yeah,
I bought this game.
Yeah. That's real steep, man.
I bought this game, and I'm okay with DLC.
Yeah.
But a dollar per game just seems – a dollar per ranked match that
I mean,
you
actually,
get, you always get rewards.
It's
blah,
kind of
blah,
interesting
blah.
If you think about it in terms of like going to an arcade. Like they're basically looking to repeat the arcade experience of like, okay, now you pay a dollar for this game or a quarter for this game or however an arcade works. Which is actually kind of an interesting analog.
Yeah, but I already bought the game.
Yeah.
If it was free to play from beginning, I don't know.
I think they're just approaching it. It's the people who are playing
it. Doesn't, like,
free.
Devastate me. It just kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I still love me some TF2.
Oh, me too.
I'm really looking forward. We're playing it, like, a whole – we have – well, as I mentioned earlier, we have this whole server for the 24-hour gaming marathon. And I'm going to be on that thing.
24 like, hours of TF2.
Like, what? Jam on bread? What's – is there
white on rice?
I think that's a racist.
Stink on.
I know. Is that a little racist?
Stink on shit.
Well, no, Weiss is right. Weiss is right.
And the other big
remember
news
me?
Story is Remember Me,
yeah,
which somebody else is going to have to talk more about because I watched the trailer, got confused, and then stopped watching it.
So what you didn't watch was the 7-minute extended gameplay footage.
That's fair.
Which actually looks super – it looks like a combination of Assassin's Creed and – Deus Ex, maybe?
Yeah, definitely Deus Ex.
Yeah. I mean, it's got that cyberpunk futuristic thing going for it.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer makes it look like an Ubisoft game.
Yes, it does,
well,
actually.
It is a French developer. Like,
Don't Nod, I think is the name.
Yeah, Don't Nod, or which
I'll
really just looks
to,
like
assholes.
Don't.
Yeah, but it has an interesting mechanic in that trailer. Like, there's, it looks like it's going to have a lot of just straight-up brawler mechanics, but it has this interesting mechanic also in the... like, the thing that you're supposed to do or the thing that makes you unique is you're able to influence people's memories. And so the mechanic or how that plays out in the game is you're able to, like, find a target and then you need to get them to do something that they otherwise wouldn't do. And you do that by changing their memories. Like, the one it shows in the trailer is, like, she receives a mission that's like, we need you to kill this guy. And she's like, you want me to kill him? And he's like, no, we don't want you to actually kill him. Make him kill himself, which is actually pretty funny.
So it's Inception.
Kind of, a little bit, maybe. But you're changing memories.
Eternal Sunshine of the Inception.
So the way it plays out in the trailer, at least, is you go into this guy's memory. It's a little like Psychonauts, actually, because you're going inside this guy's memories, and then there are various little pieces. Like in this one, there was a brandy bottle and a gun and like a mirror or a suitcase or something. And you have to pick the right one to yield the result that you want to do. So in this case, have this guy kill somebody and then have the like be consumed with grief and kill himself. So it showed like knocking over a bottle as one option, and then that plays out part of the scene, but it doesn't yield your objective result. So you have to take the safety off the gun or knock over the bottle, then take the safety off the gun, and then that somehow gets it. So the thing happens.
God, don't – I mean, crying over spilled milk is one thing, but knocking over whiskey and then killing someone seems to be like several steps too far.
Well, she was leaving him. I left out a little bit of the story. There were some key plot points that I may have skimmed over. The thing about it, though, is I'm not sure how much of it is just going to be like a trial and error kind of thing, which doesn't sound particularly appealing to me. Because, like, how would I know that I need to knock over the whiskey bottle before taking the safety off the gun?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It would just end up being process of elimination. Yeah. Oh, that doesn't work. Oh, this doesn't work. Oh, it's got
to
be that one.
See how that plays out.
Yeah.
But otherwise, that's actually a pretty cool mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
If there's, like, environmental cues to tell you what.
Well, the futuristic action part of it looks pretty awesome, too. Like, yeah. I just like the world looks unique. And also, it's just refreshing that it's a new IP. It has a female star. New idea from a new developer, like, and the Capcom is publishing it and taking a risk.
Current gen.
And it's current gen. Yeah. I'd say compare Capcom to most of it, what it publishes to most of its, like, at least Japanese competitors. It's ahead of the pack.
Capcom tries to make a Western game.
It hasn't worked so far all the time.
This one's not being developed by a Japanese studio.
No, but they had, like, Lord of Shadows was probably.
That was Konami. But I think you're thinking of the twin badness of Bionic Commando and Dark Void. Those both weren't good.
I was actually thinking that was a weird time for some unknown reason.
That was just a time for some reason where everybody was like, let's just throw all of our money to Grin.
Right.
Well, like, Grin was like, what was the
they
guy
came
that,
out with like four games and like
what was the guy that was in Transformers Terminator Salvation that they put in like and he was also in Avatar?
I don't know.
I forget that.
Whatever that actor is, they shoved him in like every movie. Mm-hmm. He's essentially Grin. And then like half the movies flopped and then he disappeared.
Right.
Yeah. But I do think Remember Me is out like May 2013. I think it is the current date, which means I guess it's probably going to be the last big budget game of this generation then.
Unless Watch Dogs gets bumped back to then.
It's a little similar to Watch Dogs too with its slightly futuristic. That's more futuristic than Watch Dogs. Watch Dogs is just one of those things where it's like 3 years in the future when you can imagine maybe this stuff exists.
3 years in the future when everything is different. Mm-hmm. Things aren't just the same except we have cooler phones.
Yeah. Well, phones in your hand and stuff.
I was going to say that's not when Black Ops 2 takes place, what, 2020 or something?
2024, 26, something like that.
I don't know. I'm still like trying to figure out what game I was talking about.
You were thinking
it was the one with Monkey and like the
Enslaved?
That was Namco.
That was Namco. Oh, damn it!
Enslaved was great.
All right, my point is
we're just going to move on to reviews because you've derailed us to the point that I don't think we're ever getting back on track.
That's fair. Let's move on.
So we're going to jump right over to reviews, and the big review of this week is Transformers: Fall of Cybertron.
Transformers,
which preview events.
Yep.
And Lorenzo, you played through the
entirety.
Itself, the entirety of the game.
Yeah.
So, what'd you think?
It was solid, as my stars designate.
Solid. Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Good old solid.
7.0.
I mean, if you liked the War for Cybertron, it's basically the same game with a few tweaks. They've took out the double
co-op.
The three-player co-op is gone, so you have levels that are specifically made for characters like Optimus Prime, where he'll be shooting a bunch of dudes like in the first game, and Cliff Jumper has like a stealth mission where you could cloak and eliminate dudes just doing executions, and there's flying missions with Starscream and all that stuff. That's Jazz.
Okay.
So he's kind of the sniper, and he's got a grappling hook that he could do a lot of platforming and stuff. So.
And like the it's actually – I remember I saw it. So it each character – it's not like you play a level and then it's like, good job. Here's the next level. Like each character meets the next character essentially.
Yeah, there's parts where that happens. Like there's one part where you're Starscream and you're flying around and you infiltrate I think it was Shockwave's
evil lair?
Like, yeah, experimental place where he's creating the Dinobots. Spoiler alert. But
Grimlock starts as a very smart person before he becomes stupid Grimlock.
Yeah, you see the whole origin of the Dinobots in this one. At that point, you know, you're Starscream and then you're talking to Grimlock while he's locked up, and then at that point you switch control from Starscream to Grimlock, which is pretty cool. Like and then you start rampaging as a T-Rex.
I can totally see this developer in like a few years, especially if Activision lets them take more time on games, becoming essentially the next like Rocksteady. Like they have some like what I saw about like the switching between characters and some of the interesting things they're doing on the campaign. That's like such high level game design that most developers don't even do. And the fact that like they're being given the keys to do whatever they want, and that's awesome. But I still feel like they're still bound to like, hey guys,
2 years, 18 months, fellas.
Well, now that's the sad. Yeah, that's a sad thing to me because when I played War for Cybertron, it was High Moon's first like big game. And when I played, I was like, this is really good, but it's the type of game that could have a great sequel. And I was really hoping that this sequel could be it, too. But in between those two games, they did have 2 years off, but then they had to make, in between that, Revenge of the Fall. No, not Revenge of the Fall. Dark of the Moon, the third the game based on the movie. And so they didn't need that distraction, but obviously Activision wanted it so they could put out an annualized franchise.
Yep.
And,
for some reason, Transformers needs to be an annualized franchise now.
It's just
that's what everyone wants.
It's a moneymaker.
Because also, like, those games are for two different people. The movie fans are not the same as the hardcore Transformers fans that are going to buy Fall of Cybertron.
They're actually
quite
different.
Quite different indeed.
Quite different is what Henry is
different indeed, yeah.
So what'd you end up giving it?
I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5.
Ah.
Is that good? That's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, it looks good. Looks good on that little scale there.
Yeah.
What else this week?
The other from technically last week is New Super Mario Mario.
You say
so,
Mario.
Real quick.
You say Mario so, like my grandpa says Mario.
Where did your grandpa grow up?
New York.
Okay, so
he is actually Italian.
Yes. So I grew up on the East Coast, as I've mentioned on podcasts before, right, around the Philadelphia area, and we say Mario.
Mario.
As does
my
Tom's
grandpa,
Italian grandpa
Frank Magrino.
So
his name is actually
you
Frank.
Guys out here in the rest of the country can say whatever you want. Those of us closer to Italy,
right,
living amongst the Italians,
yeah,
will continue. Yeah. The only reason I say I correct myself and say Mario is because every time I say Mario,
we scoff.
Henry, just specifically, yeah, Henry just goes like. Like every time.
Sometimes I raise an eyebrow. But also in Philadelphia, you guys say you wash with water.
No, we don't. In Pittsburgh, they say that.
No, I'm sorry.
Just go to Washington.
Pittsburgh is essentially Kentucky.
They also say schlep a lot.
That's a Jewish thing.
Schlep?
Yeah.
Schlep. Oh.
It's like a...
I know it's Pittsburgh, too.
Yeah, it's more of a, I believe.
The only people I know who
I'm saying that because I hear my Jewish grandmother say it a lot.
Yeah, I see. Mm.
All right, well, anyway.
It's like Nevada.
New Super
Mario Bros.
Aryan.
Yeah,
Mario.
I reviewed this 2 weeks ago, so my memory, it's just completely gone from my memory. But
okay, moving on.
No. It's
2 out of 5.
Super Mario Bros. 2, just like New Super Mario's 1.
No, it was actually... It's better than New Super Mario 1. It's
New Super Mario Wii?
I liked it more than New Super Mario
Bros.
Wii.
What about New Super Mario Wii U?
So far, I think you might be better. But all right, just the quick gist of it is...
I ran out of New Super
Mario. New Super Mario Brothers...
Super Mario Land Wii?
No.
Mario Galaxy 2.
Mario Galaxy 2 is the king of Mario games.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's fair. Statements.
That's fair.
I'm offended.
But okay,
didn't
so...
We give,
I think that was actually Super Mario Bros. 3.
Oh, I mean,
3.
Super Mario Bros. 3 is the king
of
Mario games.
Wow, you just... Wow.
New Galaxy 2 is the queen of Mario games.
And you're not... And so you don't... But you didn't like the new 3DS one at all?
No, I did like it. In my opinion... Nintendo, unless they really fuck up, they can't make
Nintendo would have to shit so many like
gold coins.
They'd have to essentially go to like the largest hotel in all of Japan and shit in every bed to make a bad.
They would actually have to do like what Bungie did with ODST. They would have to do something similar with the Mario franchise.
Yes.
Yeah. So they didn't do that. Like, so the level, it has really fun levels.
Be happy, people of Japan. You are not going to stumble into a hotel full of poo.
It has really fun levels.
Well,
the co-op school.
Weird.
Unless you go to the poo hotel. Yeah. I'm sorry. Hold on. Time out. New Super Mario 3DS.
Yes. It's the power-ups are fun, and it's got a really cool like coin mechanic at the start that I really like, where they just put – there's so many coins in every stage, like of coins everywhere you look, and – at the start, I was like, oh, this is cool. These coins are inspiring me to jump to places I wouldn't before, try harder things, challenge myself in new ways. It made it more interesting. But then about halfway through, I was like, these coins don't matter as much. Like, I'm starting to completely lose any of the meaning of these coins. And then by the end of the game, when I'd beaten every world, though not every single stage, but almost every stage, I had 40,000 coins.
Wow. Holy crap.
And the game, it like challenges you. It says on the back of the box, can you get 1,000,000 coins? Like, no, you can't. Like, only through dedicated grinding and playing the same levels, like, hundreds of times will you get 1,000,000 coins. And then when you find out how little you get for what little happens when
now,
you get 1,000,000 coins.
Time out. What do you know what you get? What would you expect in a game that, like, on the back of the box, it's like, yo, motherfucker, 1,000,000 coins. Let's see your balls. What would you expect to get?
I mean, I don't even know what would do
if,
that.
If you have to think.
I'd have to
this
think
guy,
about that.
Completionist Henry over here got 40,000.
I mean, I would have to put myself in that mindset, and I just don't think I am creative enough to put myself into that mindset.
What do you think?
I would want permanent power-ups, like a ultimate Yoshi
really?
Or something. I don't
power-ups?
Know.
Like Yoshi or something.
I would want a visit from Miyamoto
is
himself.
Yoshi in the game?
You know, like,
no, Yoshi.
So I'd want, like, Yoshi to show up.
Well, you know, in, like, Super Mario 64, when you get all 120 stars and Yoshi shows up on top of the castle, I was like, I get to ride Yoshi.
I would want
an individualized message
from Shigeru Miyamoto.
I'd want him to show up, put a Mario hat on me, look me in the eyes, and say in perfect English, you're Mario now. And then just turn and walk away. For 1,000,000 coins, for how much it would take, that's exactly what I
want.
Just
like put a video in the game that pops up when you hit 1,000,000 coins.
You see your camera turn on. You know that it's using some kind of weird 3DS technology.
It doesn't even
satellite
have to be... Yeah.
Link you to him.
It could just
He's
be
sitting on the toilet, just staring into the camera in 3D.
It's like, oh, great.
So what do you get for 1,000,000... And again, probably how many hours do you think it would take you to get 1,000,000 coins?
I would... bet at least 100.
So 100 hours. What does 100 hours
of
get you?
Of Mario.
It would get you a new start screen with a gold Mario statue on it.
Oh.
That's it.
They couldn't even be bothered to, like, give you a gold Mario hat in the
game. Yeah, or at least another stage.
Or like just reskin Mario.
Or how about you get a gold hat for your Mii on the 3DS?
Yeah. On Super Mario 3D Land, if you beat every stage with Mario, every stage with Luigi, and get the gold flag in every stage, they at least give you a final super hard stage that you couldn't get any other way. Like, that was a reward for playing the game to the nth degree. And this one, just a new start screen. And that was just ultimately why I gave New Super Mario Brothers a 3.5, was because it was still a fun Mario game, but they just... It was a half step. They're in danger of making Mario games very not special, very normal, especially when they're putting out two platformer Marios this year in the same year that they put out Mario Party 9, Mario Tennis Open, and soon Paper Mario Superstar. That's five Mario games in 1 year.
Meanwhile, back to the fact that the GameCube got one Mario game.
Yeah.
It got like a bunch of spinoffs, but it got one core Mario game. We're getting two this year. Or three this year.
Well, now within a calendar year, 3D Land was at the end of November last year. So.
Okay, we're getting three within 12 months. The GameCube got one total.
Yeah, it's getting a little extreme.
So you gave it 3.5 stars out of a 5-star scale.
Yes, I'm hoping New Mario U will have the new ideas that New Mario 2 did not have.
Here's hoping. So we're going to jump into the next review.
Darksiders 2.
Darksiders 2. Which was last week's.
Yeah, that
Lorenzo
was last week's.
Also.
Yeah. I'm on the review train right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Darksiders.
Do you think you're on the show?
Yeah.
I mean, ask yourself that honest.
It's. I mean, your good looks help.
Right.
But they're not. They don't translate that well over the microphone.
Yeah, so Darksiders 2, great game. You, if you played the first Darksiders, you played as War in that one. Mm-hmm. And this time you're playing as his brother Death. And
bit of a grim series.
Yeah, he's
Horseman of
the Grim Reaper.
I was sitting there, I'm like, who's going to make the Grim Reaper joke? Yeah.
So this one takes place, like, in the first one, War is imprisoned for like 100 years, and Darksiders 2 takes off right after he's imprisoned, and during that 100 years,
I thought it took place concurrently with Darksiders 1.
No, well, you run into the same characters that War would run into. Yeah.
Okay.
So, it takes place during that time, and Death is trying to basically clear War's name by bringing back humankind because, you know, the apocalypse just wiped them all out.
Death is bringing life.
Yeah, Death is bringing life, and...
it must be so weird for him.
Right.
at least like a million years or a few million years or 6,000 years of killing 6, people.
And like, then all you want me to do what?
Eons and eons of death.
Yes. But, yeah. And all of a sudden he's just like, you, wake up, buddy. And then it's like, and then they die again.
Yeah, so this game is huge. The map, the first world that you run into is about the size of the entire world in the first map, Darksiders. And... you know, the combat's changed. It's a lot more fleshed out. You get better combos. You get different kinds of weapons. There's a loot system now.
Tons of loot. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the loot's pretty crazy. You could get epic loot from bosses. You could find secret chests to get more loot and loot.
And you can actually, it's cosmetic too. It's not just like a weapon. Like you can see it on Death too, right?
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised because you find armor and... you know, there's repeats that are just different colors and, you know, the same armor model. But, you know, you could really make your Death character look different compared to, you know, if you me and Henry played. Mm-hmm. And the game was great. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Nice. So,
awesome. And with that, let's jump into an interview with some of the creators and developers of the Darksiders 2 video game. And when we get back, we'll jump right into the community segment. So stay tuned.
Hey, everyone. We are here with the Darksiders 2 development team. Darksiders 2 just came out, and it's actually a pretty good game. You can read the review on our website. But let's talk to some of the designers. Who I got with me?
Hedden Dalton, lead designer.
And I'm Ben Kiertzen, lead combat designer.
All right. So you guys actually are some of the best people to talk to for the questions I got. And we're going to try to keep this short just to in the interest of time. But one of the big differences between Darksiders and Darksiders 2 was just a dramatically increased scope. Like the world is much bigger. You have a lot more characters and dialogue. Loot system is new. Skill trees are new. Combat is expanded. Why did you guys where did that come from, the desire to go bigger?
Well, obviously, we're definitely not the idea of like bigger is better, but you know, sometimes to create a world that people can kind of believe in, there's always going to be parts where maybe it's not completely full of content. You know, you have desolate wastelands and areas that are going to be open, and you know, things like that. We're also, you know, more areas means that we can hide more things in there as well for items and stuff like that, and just feel like the places were connected by a very real world place. You know, rather than just literally a tunnel going to, you know, the next main channel of the game and then just doing another tunnel. We've just opened up and just say, you know what, you can just kind of explore this area. Some of this area is not that important, some of it is. It's up to you to go and explore the world like it would be if we just threw you in the middle of a field somewhere and said, right, you know, start looking around. And that's kind of what we wanted to do with this. And the RPG stuff and NPCs and loot, these were all things that we talked about for Darksiders 1. And obviously now we can, because we had the base from Darksiders 1, that we could start to add some of these things in and kind of get close to the sort of game that we wanted to do the first time around.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would have been really difficult to try to kind of cram all this stuff. Like, what kind of pressures were you facing to kind of get all of this new stuff in the game? Was there ever a moment where you're like, we cannot do this, this is way too much?
Well, there was things that we did cut. I mean, there's a few things that we did cut. I mean, we had, like, a special speed ability where you could run across water, run walls and all the ceilings and all the stuff. It was crazy. It was a lot of fun.
Mist walk.
Yeah, we had a mist walk ability where the horse could only go to a certain environment and you couldn't. And we had an ability that basically allowed you to switch gravity so you could do puzzles on the walls and the ceilings and things like that. It was a little bit crazy. And those things fell off the plate because the things that we thought were important, which were loot, side quests, additional NPCs, all those other things that added a little bit of depth to the gameplay, the story and the world were like massively important to us. So those things never worked, but the other things that were around the side, some of that got sacrificed to make sure that all those other things got done.
Do you guys, like, when you were probably very early on in the game, were you ever considering, like, well, maybe we should just do like a mid-sized game, something more similar to Darksiders, more polished, or was it just like all the way we have to go much bigger?
Again, it wasn't really the size that we went for. We just basically said, well, if we could add all these different components in there, we need to give them a world to let them breathe a little bit as well. And, you know, I wanted to do a lot more hidden stuff in the world as well, because I believe, like, if you're playing an adventure game, you know, adventure is about exploration and discovery and finding things. So some things may be in plain sight, some things may not be in plain sight. But I think players have fun, like, looking around places, going to areas where they think they shouldn't be going and then finding something as a reward. That's kind of like one part of the discovery and the exploration around the adventure, and we thought it was important. And to do that, you have to give the world, the player, the world to get that experience, right? So that's the reason why we went bigger.
Well, also, it's not about making Darksiders 1.5, right?
Right.
Almost Darksiders 2.5. You have a whole new character. You have, you know, cool abilities. You have loot. You have all these RPG mechanics, skill trees, everything. It wasn't about just making an update to the first game. It was about making a true sequel, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like a visual trait here, right? Because when we did our demo for the first game, we gave away our entire first dungeon, which was like, for some people, like 2 hour down, you know, 2 hour game. So we tend to go a little bit. We aim much higher than we should do, really, sometimes. But I think that benefits the player in most cases. And that's what we wanted to do. We basically said, you know, we had some great fans from Darksiders 1. How could we improve the second one and make sure that we keep it, you know, keep it fresh and keep it strong while keeping the heart from the first one? And these are the things, basically, I think, complement the main game nicely.
And as far as, like, getting players through, like, a much bigger game, what are the kind of tricks that you use, like, when you have a much wider open game like this? How do you keep players on track?
Well, do you mean track, or do you mean,
just keeping them engaged, you know? Like, we don't want you to just be, we want you to know what you're supposed to be doing all the time, but at the same time, we want you to have the freedom to go find your own kind of stuff to do. Like, are there ways that you kind of subtly kind of move the player in certain directions? Or is that more, or is it, I'd imagine it'd be more difficult when you have such a large game.
Well, there's lots of things. I mean, we obviously keep people track of, like, the core story of the game, because you look at the map, right, and there's always an indicator telling you where you're supposed to go. We use visual indicators to help lead the player in certain aspects. You know, Ben on the combat side will unlock certain parts of the combos, more parts of the combat as you go further into the games. It's about variety and frequency for the player, right? I mean, it's about giving them abilities, but then allowing them to have different ways to execute on those abilities. And it's the frequency of it, because if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, it becomes like a production line. So what we're trying to do is keep throwing different obstacles in there and different ways to use the abilities that you've got. And just as you get used to it, we throw a new ability in there.
Well, our quest system is a huge part of that, right? Like, we say, here's your quest, it's the main story quest. We also have 2, 3, up to 5 or 6 at one time side quests to do. So you can say, all right, well, I'm supposed to go here, but what if I go over here and try to do this dungeon? Oh, you know, this is pretty interesting. Maybe there's some loot in here for me. And then you come back out. Oh, okay, let me go back to my main story. And, you know, so you're never, like, forced along.
Right.
Have additional things to do.
And it's kind of like what we did on the first game. I mean, if you remember the first game, there was parts where suddenly he was in, like, a shooting sequence, a flying sequence, and, you know, one part was, like, very heavily combat, then you did some puzzles. And that's the reason why I think that combination of combat, puzzles, and adventure is kind of good, because you've got all these different mechanics and systems that you can keep the player engaged by. You're not always just located on one type of system. I mean, admittedly, it's probably more difficult to have one system and then give the player variety that way. Then you have to become a lot more creative with the way they test one system. But I think it's nice for the player to switch off frequencies quite often.
Yeah, I mean, kind of one of the things in that vein is, like, if you were making, like, a more mid-sized game and kind of keeping your scope smaller, You would have to like dive more into certain mechanics, but there is still like with one of the, I guess the advantage of these big games is you can kind of throw a lot more stuff at the player.
Well, yeah, again, you know, because it's a bigger world, we can put a side dungeon off to the west when you're really supposed to be going north, right? I mean, we need that real estate to put that thing in the first place, but it's up to the player to do that or climb up this cliff and then find a whole new place. I mean, again, it's about that, the player's sense of adventure within what we're trying to do, an action adventure game, right? So having that real estate for the player to go explore is kind of important.
Yeah, it must be really difficult to like stay focused with the development, though, if you're like, oh, it would be so cool if we could do this, and then like start building that out. Is that a problem for you guys?
We always have that along the development process, but we certainly don't cap that. In fact, we actually embrace it, because sometimes things that come up, because you start to understand the product, right? Once all the systems and stuff come together, you really see the game for what it is. And that's sometimes where the best ideas come from, because you can really see how it all works. You can see what benefits the game and what doesn't. Some things like we've had in the game, it doesn't quite work. Let's cut it or let's change it. Or someone like Ben will come in with the idea of the Crucible, and we end up doing the Crucible, which wasn't on the plans originally, but it was a cool idea. It was something that we could handle. And we just put it in the game, and it wasn't in the original plan. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, I think sometimes some of the better stuff comes at that stage where you know exactly what you're dealing with. It's a little bit when you're just on paper or you're just building up the systems. Mm-hmm. But once you're a little bit more mature through the development process, you can start saying, this game is cool, but this will be even nicer. And then you just got to look at your risk and rewards, right? How much time you're going to put in, how much you're going to get out of the side, mm-hmm. and does something need to be sacrificed for this idea? Mm-hmm. We always have those eureka, wouldn't it be cool moments, and sometimes we laugh at it and say, yeah, that would be awesome, but we really can't do it. So some of the times we just got to throw it in the bin. Sometimes we'll put it aside and say, if we do another game, we'll do it in another one.
Right.
So yeah, we try and keep track of stuff like, because usually things that are really inspiring or cool ideas, we'll remember it, just like we did on the first game. You know, there was things that we wanted to do in the first and we did on the second, so
right.
It always
Yeah, and when you guys are playing games, what do you look for? Like, do you like the big, open, massive games, or do you guys like gravitate towards small games? And if you're like looking for ideas from other games, like, or inspiration from other games, do you tend to find it in the small games and the big games?
I mean, we try to play everything. Right. I mean, you know,
but as far as personal preference goes,
personal preference. I mean, yeah, you know, I love huge games. I love playing, you know, open world games. Mm-hmm. You know, play Skyrim here or Dragon's Dogma or Dark Souls or something like that, or Saints Row. But on the other hand, I love, you know, just downloading, you know, a cool Xbox Live Arcade game that somebody recommended and found, oh, I really like how they did counter moves in that game, or, oh, look at how they did that boss. That's pretty unique. I mean, it's really just getting out there and playing everything instead of just trying to play one thing. In a personal preference, I just like playing things where people do unique, you know, they bring something new to
it. Right.
Or be it RPG mechanics, or be it exploration, or, you know, even playing something like Journey, you're like, wow, this game really has almost no mechanics, but it's awesome, you know, like, or even something like Shadow of the Colossus, where you're like, this is pretty much the most straightforward boss killing game, but at the same time, you're like, wow, I never knew a game could be like that, you know what I mean? So we can get inspiration from anywhere, and
right.
In terms of personal preference, I don't know, it's, sometimes it's just, what am I playing today? This is awesome, and then the next day you're like, oh man, this is a totally different game.
Very fickle about it. Yeah, because it seems interesting that, I mean, kind of looking at the landscape of the game industry right now, there's big games like Darksiders 2, and there's like the smaller downloadable games. Do you think there's like a middle ground that's still viable for the mid-sized game?
I think that band of gaming now is much harder to sell, right? Because when you're still saying like middle tier games, whatever they may be called, it's still the same price, right? It's still $60.
Right.
So, it gets harder now, so that's why the middle tier of games is finding much harder. It's much more competitive in there, because people are like, I can only spend $60. Is it going to be Call of Duty, or is it going to be X game by some developer who's trying really hard to do something different? I don't know. Whatever the actual choice is, you know, so it becomes a lot harder for those in the middle to succeed, and it is much harder. I mean, I'm definitely excited by all the different platforms and ways that developers and anyone just getting into the industry can actually get in and do games now is awesome. And right now, it's just I definitely, that midsection of games is definitely feeling the hurt right now, and that's why you see games come out going under the radar and then going, you know, selling for cheap and pre-order, you know, secondhand within like just a couple
of
weeks.
And
it's a crying shame. I mean, I played some belting games that really didn't get any coverage, and it's just the way it is now. If you haven't got the marketing behind them and the push behind them, the buzz or the name behind the development team, it becomes incredibly difficult to sell it to the public.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think it's like a price point issue? Like, do you think it would be good if there was like a more like something between like $15 and $60?
The problem with that is people look at that and I guess psychologically they think, oh, that's going to be a cheap right. made game. If you see a game that's out there and it just comes on the shelf for $30 or something,
it's like, well, something's wrong with this game.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an Xbox Live game or a PlayStation arcade game or a PlayStation store game, you know, and it's not a AAA game. Mm-hmm. But you're like, $30. That's probably
you're thinking budget game. I mean, it's kind of like in the old days where you used to have like, you know, a $20 game or whatever, exactly. a $10 game. And then back in England, we used to have like £10 games, and then Mastertronic came out with the $199 range, which was the budget range. Mm-hmm. And actually, a budget range of.
You can get good games there, but people like psychologically go, oh, it's probably not that good.
But they get spammed. It's kind of like, look at the iPhone market, right? It gets spammed mm-hmm. with so much stuff now for like 99 cents or mm-hmm. whatever it is. Like, it's hard to cull the wheat from the chaff. You know, you kind of know what's good, what's bad. It's just there's just sheer amount of content there, so mm-hmm. it's a little bit hard to sift through it all. I mean, some great games are getting on there for like 99 cents, $1.99. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. So, again, people will initially be cautious, I think. They'll probably just go, $30? Why is it so cheap? And they'll all...
Unless it's like a mod, like something like DayZ comes out, and they're like, maybe. Oh, look, I can get this game cheap. You know, I can get Arma and Combined Ops for only $30 and play this game for free. And then it doesn't feel budget, because it feels like you're playing a mod. So, I mean, I think there's a big opportunity, I guess, maybe almost a resurgence for mod, you know, mod again because of things like DayZ. And, you know, some of the biggest games ever have been just mods, you know, Counter-Strike like and Team Fortress and yeah, all of stuff like that. So, but I mean, if you're not labeling it as a budget or half-price release, because sure, to play DayZ, you only have to spend $30, but you don't feel that you're playing a $30 game. You feel like you're playing a mod on a $30 game, if that makes sense. I don't know. It's kind
of
weird.
But right, so it's kind of just like the way it's spun when it's being advertised or promoted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is becoming harder to sustain, though, because obviously... Yeah. You know, especially with the economic climate everywhere, you know, pretty much globally, like $60 for a lot of people is a lot of money. So,
right.
And obviously, we start to go forward and whatever comes in the future with platforms, people are just going to expectations are just always going to be rising, rising, and rising, and that content has to be made somehow. Mm-hmm. So it just becomes like a really difficult situation, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it also kind of seems like there are actually a lot of smaller, like $15 games that. At probably one point would have been the mid-sized game, or at least people would have considered them the mid-sized game, because they're like 12, 15 hours, and it's only $15.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that I might have played recently. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I've downloaded quite a lot of things on Xbox. I can't think of one
and you kinda
right
get,
now.
Right. Legs behind it. Yeah, I think that's really all I wanted to talk about. I need to wrap it up. But do you want to give me like the big sell on why people should buy Darksiders 2?
Go for it.
Big sell.
I'm not a hype man.
No, do it. Do it up.
Because it's badass. How would you say it? I can't say
because it's Darksiders 2.5. No, basically, actually coming back to money, I think this is a good point to go on, because I think what people get for $60
yeah.
or £50, whatever it is in Europe or Euros, I feel players are going to get a lot of hours out of the game. They're going to have a fun time. It's something that you don't have to be online or with mm-hmm. anyone else. You can sit in your own room and just enjoy it and play it over like a matter of weeks. Just enjoy it. There's a lot of depth there. There's replayability in there. There's lots of player choice that you can go back and play it in a completely different way and try and experience it again. And we obviously put other challenges in, like the Crucible in there. There's lots of player choice. I mean, one of the taglines that we did creating the game was choose your own death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want players to go through and, you know, enjoy the game multiple times and play it multiple ways. And
sounds like you guys succeeded. Yeah, it sounds like you guys succeeded pretty well. It's getting good reviews out on the critical sphere. So yeah, I think that does it for us. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, man. It was a pleasure.
Yep. And we will get to the rest of the podcast starting right now.
And we're back. Welcome to the second portion, not half, because it's only going to be a few minutes
right.
long.
We're
the
actually
community
nearly
segment for Radio Radar Episode 2. Last week's question of the week was, what is your first gaming memory? And we got a ton of responses.
Thank
over
you.
Over trillion responses.
We love it when you talk back to us.
100 responses.
Love it.
Talk back to me, baby.
Here are some of a few that we liked. Tony Wilson saying that his first gaming memory was FIFA 94.
Should we say their last names?
His name on the website.
Tony W.
Tony W.
Username Tony Wilson.
T. Wilson. Saying his first was FIFA 94 because his uncle had a PS1 and he would visit them and play fake ball. That's what his uncle referred to in the video game version. Fake ball.
That's kind of a dick.
Yeah, seriously.
Why do you even buy a soccer game then if he feels that way?
Sonny D saying that first gaming memory was Pokemon Crystal, which is actually makes me feel super old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of these replies are going to make us feel old.
Yeah.
Intentionally so. What was that about?
The question wasn't make the hosts feel old, guys.
Another answer that we liked, pulling it up here. All right, so it was from Cody Stovall, good old old
I know
fan
that name.
Tony,
friend of the show, Cody Stovall.
Yes, Sega Genesis games like Cool Spot, Pocahontas, Aladdin, Barney, and Thomas the Tank Engine.
Oh,
I don't feel as old now, but I still feel pretty old. Next up, Bladed Falcon saying first gaming memories are sort of fuzzy, but the one that sticks was playing Dig Dug on his dad's work computer, work in quotation marks, because I guess it was the Dig Dug computer.
Great.
When he was 5 years old.
Hmm.
And let's also do Unoriginal. That's the person's name. First memory is playing Super Mario Brothers 2 with brother and sister.
Oh,
that's adorable. What a bad entry to the Mario series. Even though it's not a bad game, just jumping right
into that. I
like
that one.
It's a good game, but it's like, that just sort of, it would probably paint your, it's like, why, like you play three and you're like, where are the turnips?
Right.
I'm so confused. Mm. Only one character?
Why can't I play as Peach anymore and float?
Yeah, this is terrible. So this week's question of the week is, what is your favorite sequel?
And the one we like the best.
Yes.
The one we like the best. We have a couple Darksiders 2 original soundtrack CDs. So if you have
what's your favorite sequel?
However you explain that the best, we will pick two and send these to you. And if you want to enter into a chance to get some Sleeping Dogs PC Steam codes, we have four of them.
Yes.
And we also have one Darksiders 2 Steam code.
Sure do.
So go ahead and follow us on Twitter and everybody.
GR Radio Radar.
GR Radio Radar.
All one word.
If we get up to a 500, then we'll start handing these out, the Sleeping Dogs ones. And if we get up to 750, then we'll also throw in the Darksiders.
So basically,
it's kind of a, what is the word I'm looking for?
Contest.
Oh, right.
It's a sweepstakes.
I'm incentivizing you all to stalk us on Twitter.
And yes, and so, but if you leave comments on the article with what your favorite sequel is, we will.
Yeah, if you don't want to even deal with all that stuff, just tell us what your favorite sequel is. And we'll maybe send you a Darksiders 2 original soundtrack.
And what is your favorite sequel?
My favorite sequel is Team Fortress 2. Easy. Easy peasy. Although I did actually like Team Fortress 1 a lot.
It was good. It's just so different.
I used to play that when I was on the yearbook. Like we had, those were the best computers in high school, the yearbook computers. So instead of working on yearbook, we would just play Quake and Team Fortress.
That's a good move.
Yeah.
My favorite sequel is probably Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
Going a little, not much more recent, just because I love Mass Effect, but that was one of my favorite, like, man, Mass Effect's good. I bet Mass Effect 2 will be a million times better. And then it was.
Yeah.
And even though I love Mass Effect 3, screw everyone who cries about the ending, I like Mass Effect 2 a lot more. Lorenzo?
Well, since Coop, you stole mine, I'm going to go with, right off the top of my head, probably Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. I'll take that one.
Really? That's such a weird game.
I know. A lot of people have their gripes about it. But, you know, I know a lot of people don't like it, but, you know, it was one of my favorites.
Personality now.
It's great.
What about you, Henry?
Mine is going to be Yoshi's Island, which the sequel to New Super Mario World, because it's just so damn gorgeous. Like, I love the cartoon graphics so much. And I also wanted to say that one because I just talked with some of our colleagues at Game Informer, and at least one of them there, Dan Reichert, agrees with me that Yoshi's Island should count on a Mario best Mario platformers list. That it is a Mario game.
Do you play as Mario?
Okay, here's he said he interviewed Miyamoto and Takeshi Tezuka, who the director of Yoshi's Island, and he asked them both, "Is that a real Mario game?" And they said yes. So
they're not going to say no to that.
What are they going to say? No,
it's a Yoshi game.
I don't even know how this came out of my studio.
Interview any developer, and they're going to tell you the current game they're working on is the best one.
If they say it's a real Mario game, it's a real Mario game.
That's like playing a. I can't even think of an analogy. It's like being like, man, I love that Epona game. Like, no, you're playing. It's like if they made a game where you're just Link only on Epona for the entire game,
or like that Link's crossbow
game. Training.
Yeah, I love that crossbow. Oh man, that crossbow was my favorite character.
Yeah. Fine,
that's a great. If we do count it, it's my favorite. But you can't count it. It's not. It's the only Mario game where you don't jump on things. Well, Mario.
My Game Informer friend Dan Reichert agrees with me.
Right. Well,
so shout out to Dan Reichert.
Is not invited to talk to you anymore. Danny, you don't talk to my Hank ever again about video games. You can talk about wrestling, but no more video games. But that's it for this week. Again, 24-hour marathon at the end of the week. Comment in the article. Follow us on Twitter. I am at Hollander Cooper.
I'm GR Radio Radar. I guess that's me. I guess I have
that can be
one.
You.
I'm Henry Gilbert, HENEREYG. HENEREYG.
Oh, my God. You spelled it wrong. I realize that's right.
I'm at El Valoria. That's V as in Victor. ELORIA. I need followers. I only have like 100, so.
Pretty pathetic. It's pathetic and sad that you don't say anything.
If I get up to like 200, I might start tweeting, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Other way around. People come to you because you're interesting. They don't come to you so that you become interesting.
No.
They come to me. You're not suddenly going to gain a personality because more people are looking at you.
No, no.
It's not some kind of weird superpower. People are not the yellow sun rays on Superman that give him the power of personality. So if you comment, question of the week. You can enter for a chance to get a copy of the Darksiders 2 soundtrack. And if you follow Tom Agrino on Twitter.
No, not Tom Agrino.
I know. GR Radio Radar on Twitter. You can win Sleeping Dogs and Darksider Steam codes.
Right. Do us a solid. Follow us.
Do everyone a solid.
Yeah.
And do
follow
it.
Follow us. And so, yeah, that's it. See you next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Peace.
How does this game work?
I've never played this before.
You ever play Apples to Apples?
No.
So okay, you see that card?
Yeah.
Put down the one you think in your hand is the most accurate. Which one will get you laid if you mention it?
And then explain yourself.
I did not realize that this was a... is that even PG-13 at this point?
I'd say so.
Yeah? You have to be at least 13 to talk about sex?
Yeah, I think that's the rule.
That's the rule now?
That's the way.
Times are changing.
My parents always said
Bob Dylan
19.
Was right.
All right, is everyone in?
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do this.
All right, so let's flip them. Which one will get you laid if you mention it?
What?
I'll go first. I chose flower.
Okay, flower power.
For the sole reason of the fact that I could make a deflower joke.
Really? And you think that would help you out?
I mean on the podcast.
Oh.
And that is literally the end of my reasoning. So Lorenzo, for which will get you laid?
You just said the word deflower.
I know.
Not a joke.
That's the joke.
It's not a joke.
It's a pretty good joke.
That's just a word.
It's more of a pun.
Which one will get you laid, Lorenzo?
I chose Call of Duty Black Ops out of my deck here, solely because there's a lot of burly dudes and, you know, chicks love dudes, I guess.
Are you going for the burly dudes?
I don't know.
it's a little ambiguous there.
Yeah.
Burly dudes.
Yeah.
All right.
You're done.
Mine is NBA Jam.
Second week in a row, NBA Jam gets a mention.
I picked NBA Jam because I think, you know, if you met some girls at the bar and you're like, hey, remember NBA Jam? Out of a lot of video games, I don't know if
NBA Jam is inherently a panty dropper.
No.
Well, no, but I think that's at least like a good starting point to be like, hey, do you remember NBA Jam? When he said he's on fire? Yeah, I do too.
Well,
and then
my pants are on
going
fire.
From
you're
right
anticipating these girls being drunker than any girls have ever been.
Well, I'm just used to... there's a good entry point of like, hey, remember the 90s, like with a certain age of women. And so NBA Jam is one of those types of things.
I like how you have to ask as if they weren't like sentient in the 90s.
You can gauge
how
old they are.
Remember the 90s?
Well, I've seen it work of like, hey, remember Rugrats? Wasn't that a great show? Yeah, I remember all that. Right. Like,
so I have Final Fantasy VII, and this is absolutely an inherent panty dropper because... The people who get into that kind of JRPG stuff, they are freaky weird, and they like it. They're so obsessed with the whole like Cloud. Like Cloud is you dress up as Cloud. All you have to do is a little cosplay. It's like, oh yeah, I dress up as Cloud sometimes.
So you can just be like, girl, you must come from the Cloud.
No. You're like, so you like Final Fantasy VII? Well, I occasionally cosplay as Cloud. And you're in. That's it.
Come back to my you're a whoosh of all the pennies and boxers and briefs in the surrounding towns dropping.
Yeah, at least a 5-mile radius. So
come
that's...
back to my place and you'll see the giant sword I have.
That's literally where we're ending it. That's the ending line.
Out of my other two were Zork and Cabela's.
Hunt, I would have gone with Cabela's.
America's.
Nah, if I felt then I'd have to make a lot of assumptions about like I'd have to say like only hillbillies.
I got all the military shooters, America's Army and Black Ops. Weird.
America's Army. You could have been like, you could have just used your information. It's not which knowledge.
No, I was going to say
you were a veteran.
You were going to say I was in the service, girl.
Yeah.
I fought for
offensive.
You.
Exactly.
What are you going to do for me?
Yeah.
I serve my country.
I think that will give you a better shot than
I think that would actually get you slapped, but...
It's win-win.
What do I know?
Hey, it's physical contact.